Were any of your formative crushes cartoon characters? Are any of your current crushes cartoon characters? If so, your ears are in excellent company here. I'm comedy writer and 41-year-old child, Gabby Hutchinson-Crouch, and I say cartoon characters can be sexy. Why? Let's find out, with the help of some funny guests who are here for a chat about the animated characters that make them bounce around like a skunk who's just seen a cat with some paint on it. Will we find something out about early crushes, pop culture and sexuality, or will we just talk about CGI pecs? Whatever we do, I hope it'll convince you that that funny tummy feeling you get every time you hear the theme tune to Danger Mouse is absolutely fine. Welcome to Curiously Drawn. With me this episode is a comedian, writer, producer and director, half of the award-winning Seance cast, executive producer of BBC Sounds' Human Error, head writer for Channel 4's online sketch show Shots, and much, much more. Like me, her podcast came second place in the British Comedy Awards, and like me, she totally counts that as being award-winning, because silver is still an award, damn it! It's Charlie Dinkin. Hello.
Yeah. Hi.
Hi.
It is an award.
And we got a cushion. Have you got the little cushion?
I'm sitting right next to my Seance cast cushion right now, I can only have it out because my dog's away. So he's absolutely desperate to hump it.
It is a very small little cushion that you get from the podcast awards if you're nominated for a British Podcasting Award. It's a little dinky one. And yeah, I can totally understand that that would be like the correct size for a dog to just want to do terrible things to.
Absolutely perfect for a dog to have an afternoon of passion with.
And it's got your face on it as well, hasn't it?
Yeah, my face, logo. Zoe face.
That's delightful.
Yeah.
See, ours
We've
has just
got a bit insane here.
Yeah, ours has just got a slightly problematic rendering of Cleopatra on it. So that's all right. The cat can do what she likes to Cleopatra. Anyway, we're here to talk about sexy, sexy cartoons.
A topic I've never thought about before, but now I've thought about, I was like, this goes deep.
It does go deep. And you've taught it, and you. One of your choices is somebody that it sparked off sudden memories that I had a crush on this character too when I was little, and it's your the one that I've put as the first choice. So your first choice is: he's small, he's fluffy, he speaks in a very high pitched voice. Sometimes he dresses kind of like Indiana Jones. He's the one with the older brother energy out of these two gumshoes who pick up all the slack when sometimes the crimes go slipping through the cracks. There's no case too big, no case too small. If you need help, just call Chip the Chipmunk off of Chip and Dale.
Oh my God, yes.
Yes. So for me, it is Rescue Rangers era Chip and Dale. I don't know about you.
Yeah, Rescue Rangers is when they have their most distinctive personalities and also like the cleanest line drawing, which I think makes it seem more official. I was watching some older little films that they were in, and there's one where they're both trying to like seduce this sexy little jazz age chipmunk, and they're wearing little top hat and tails. I quite like that too. But really, no, Rescue Rangers for me is the... Is their succession? It's the peak of that. It's Kieran Culkin in Succession is Chip in Rescue Rangers for me.
It's an interesting one, Rescue Rangers, because it feels like, because it's kind of like a little bit the Rescuers, but even though the Rescuers was also Disney, it's like the Rescuers, but not with the Rescuers in it. The Rescuers with some other Disney properties and also some guys that they made up. And sort of set it in the modern day, and
yeah, it makes absolutely no sense at all. It really is a mashup.
I mean, but... it makes more sense than Tailspin, which is what if Baloo was a wartime pilot?
These for me, because some of my job and my joy is trying to figure out like what a good vehicle for a person would be, and I like that someone's just been like, "What's the vehicle for Chip and Dale?" And it's like, we got to put them in with these other guys. It's going to really make them pop. Let's get them in the Indiana Jones costume.
Yeah, because it was apparently it's Indiana Jones and Magnum PI. Those are the two looks. So Dale's got like the Magnum PI Hawaiian shirt.
That's cute. I like that.
Yeah. And for some reason, because it was like detective agency, but also like adventuring, also sort of, yeah, sort of rescuing like artifacts as well as people. And yeah, so it's like a little bit of everything. Yeah, a little bit of everything. So yeah, it's sort of Indiana Jones meets Magnum PI meets a girl inventor mouse. Meets a big greedy Australian rat for some reason. Like, what was it? And it felt like the episodes were always about Monterey Jack, the Australian big mouse and it was always about him. But you already have a clown character. You already have Dale, who's the clown, he's the fool against Chip's straight man.
Yeah.
And
Dale's the dumbass.
Yeah, Chip's the brains, and it and also sort of Gadget's the brains, but in a different way, sort of softer brains. And it just felt, it always felt like Monterey Jack was unnecessary and annoying as well, because it was always him like going, "Oh, I want some cheese. I'm gonna go and find some cheese. Oh no, we all nearly got killed again, but still, I managed to." It was just always him wanting to eat something and causing chaos. It's like, oh.
Yeah,
annoying, because he was the biggest as well. He should have had some sort of, and he was the only one with like an adult voice. So it was like, why is this adult getting the more childlike ones into danger all the time?
Some domineering behavior there. Yeah. I wasn't so into that.
Yeah, he is quite.
I did like the show.
Yeah. No, I loved, and I would get up. It would be on. Like crazy early in the morning, and I used to get up on a Saturday especially for it, go and sit downstairs and watch Chip and Dale like 6:30 on a Saturday, because I was that into it. So I think
One of life's true joys, having the energy to rise early
to watch a cartoon
for pleasure.
I know. It's something that doesn't happen these days because of streaming, is it? Because you don't get unless it's like a football match that's on in like Australia or something that somebody gets up a ridiculous hour to watch. Nobody really sort of has to sort of schedule this joy.
A friend of mine told me he was getting up every morning to watch an episode of The Sopranos before work, like it was a little Saturday morning cartoon. And I quite like that.
Yeah.
I liked it. I thought that's a nice way to live.
And it was Chip with me as well that I really liked. I think I liked it because he was a bit of a dick.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a sort of the Rimmer character type. There's a slightly arsey sort of control freak.
Oh, it was just a little cheese attack. No need to get your fur up.
No, Chip's right. Your governor ale almost got us killed.
Oh, gang it up for me, eh? Well, Monterey Jack never backed down from a dust up in his life.
Easy, Marty. Just listen to me for a second.
That's all you ever want us to do. Listen to you.
It captures something which I think is like quite fundamental for me for all these characters. And in fact, all my celebrity or on-screen or pop culture crushes, which is, do I fancy them or do I like relate to them or want to be them? And it's not that I wanted to be Chip, but I am the older sibling. I often feel like I am the sensible one and I'm dealing with other people who are way more up for having a good time than me. So in that sense, I just kind of like related to that element of his character. But also my boyfriend's dramatic theory is that you just see like all women want is a love triangle. And that's why the love triangle is such a central characteristic of like so many stories. And it's like, what is a love triangle except me deciding between Chip and Dale, you know?
I mean, they kind of had that because they were both after Gadget. They were both sort of sexually interested in Gadget, whereas Monterey Jack just wanted cheese. I think his sexuality was just cheese. There was an episode that at least referenced that Chip's character type could be like attractive to girls, because there was an episode where a young girl who he'd sort of helped out of a tree or something. Like a young, it wasn't like a human girl, it was like a squirrel girl or something. He'd like rescued, and she got a massive, massive crush on him, and then was sort of getting in more danger because she was following him around and stuff. So it was aware that that girls might like this. It was slightly officious dickhead in a fedora.
That's very interesting. The potential for attraction existed.
Yeah.
Yeah, he definitely was the love interest more than a Dale. Even though, as you get older, you realize the Dale's more fun. Go with the idiot. have the happy go lucky guy. What a nicer time you'd have than old anxious Chip.
Yeah. I really like anxious characters, though. So many of my fictional characters are just like, I've just got like these plethoras of mental health issues. They're always like really anxious and depressed. And I think, as you're saying, it's like, it's a sort of combination of sexual attraction and really sort of imprinting on them. Just like, yes, you are so stressed all the time. That's me. And I'm also horny for this.
100%. Oh yeah. I like the aesthetic of Chip as well. I think, I don't remember having a crush on Indiana Jones or being that interested in Indiana Jones, but I think it's such an archetype of masculinity, isn't it, Indiana Jones? But I, to this day, do like a good jacket and a little hat. Crucially, not a fedora, but I think men can make a hat work more than they think they can.
Yeah. It did suit him, his little leather jacket.
Yeah.
You got to wonder where they got little clothes like that, because all of their other things are like, very borrowers-y. You can see that they've used like human things to, like, they're flying ships made out of like a washing up bottle and a rubber glove. In fact, they in the new DuckTales, they make a little appearance, make a little cameo. This guy is in a, I can't remember who it is, but he's sort of locked up in a cell, and there happens to be a washing up bottle and a rubber glove on the floor, and then these little, the little guys, there's no actors playing them, but they sort of come out and they use all the bottle tops and things to make their little flying machine, and they escape, and as they escape, they free this guy who's stuck in a cell as well. Yeah, it's nice little, because the new DuckTales has sort of created this sort of MCU extended universe where all of the 80s Saturday morning cartoons exist at the same time, because they sort of reference the gummy berry juice as this sort of medieval, like, Robin Hood style myth.
Funny, everyone's got an MCU.
And like Darkwing Duck exists in that universe and stuff. I imagine that Baloo is also a World War II pilot in that universe. But also, I did some research, and Chip was voiced at that point by Tress MacNeille, making him one of many, many Tress MacNeille characters I have a crush on.
Very interesting. So that does raise the question, is it the voice, and is it something pervasive about that than rather than the aesthetic? Because so much of the character is, I don't know, but the voice, stupid for Chip and Dale. That's the other thing. They sound dumb.
They do. I really like Tress MacNeille.
fair. Nothing but respect.
I also found out they're making a CGI / live action version of the Rescue Rangers for Disney Plus. They are currently in the process of making them. I'm not sure how I feel about it, especially when I found out about the casting. So Andy Samberg is going to play Dale. John Mulaney is going to play Chip.
Oh, I'm very interested in this.
Yeah, but the premise sounds horrible. they're fighting video piracy, because of course they are on Disney Plus. Hey now, you've got to pay your evil corporation your £40 a year or whatever it is.
I'm interested in that. I fancy Andy Samberg more than John Mulaney, so maybe I will switch my allegiance.
Yeah, he is hotter, isn't he?
But the thing, I'm not that interested in a CGI version, because I'm worried it'll be too close to Alvin and the Chipmunks, who I fundamentally do not fancy.
That will be controversial with another guest that I'm having on this.
Who fancies Alvin and the Chipmunks?
Yeah.
No, they seem like nice guys, but they don't have the angst. I'm not interested.
Yeah.
the tension isn't there. They get on too well.
Yeah, you see, I'm sure I'll bring this up on the other podcast, but I'm much more into Dave because I'm into like really vulnerable dads who, again, he's overworked and stressed. It's just a thing I have. Oh my God, this guy is like, oh, he's having such a horrible time. Yes, I'm so into him.
Yes, great.
Your second choice is definitely somebody who I wouldn't have a thing for because he's not stressed at all. Your second choice is the muscle-bound, problematic, pretty boy incel that all the cartoon hot mamas love to hate. He dresses and acts like it's the 50s, he has an Elvis fixation, and he lives with his mother. It's hot 90s sex pest, Johnny Bravo.
Yeah, this I feel like is a piece of priming that is really against my better judgment. Is like, I just need you to know, I don't think Johnny Bravo is a good guy.
That's okay, you can have crushes on terrible people. Johnny Bravo kind of passed me by. I remember I watched a few episodes, but because I couldn't warm to him, I didn't really like the cartoon that much. So can you talk me through what you like about him?
Yeah, we got Cartoon Network when I was about 12 and we'd really wanted it, and then I guess my parents got Sky or whatever it was on, and so Cartoon Network was part of that, and then I really really watched loads of Cartoon Network shows all the time and loved all of them, and I really liked that they were kind of a little bit grubby and like not so patronizing and childlike, and I think I understood the joke of Johnny Bravo. Like I did, the joke is on him, right, that he is like an idiot and he's so incompetent around women, but he is also hot. He's like a big hot dude. I think the funniest thing is, so now I have a friend called Chris who looks exactly like him. Like in adulthood I have found a Johnny Bravo to be my good friend, and the thing about Chris is that he is so handsome that like stuff happens to him all the time that you would never expect to be real things. Like he was an extra multiple times, he's been an extra on film sets and people have come over and been like, you should have a bigger part in this film, and given him a bigger part because he's so handsome. And I just think it's okay to fancy himbos.
It is so weird. Yeah, it is so weird with hot people. Like I've got a work friend who's like crazy hot, and it's just like, yeah, as you say, people will just go up to them and be just like, hey, you're handsome, do you want this stuff?
It's crazy to see. And I just think it's like my campaign for this life is hot people are people too. And then I'm allowed to kiss them if I want to.
Yeah.
And that's sort of feminist in a way. If I date very hot dudes only. But I think I got that from Johnny Bravo.
But so he is very pretty and sort of well built and well coiffed, and that all sort of goes against the stereotype of the sort of the loser in love. So I mean, it kind of feels like even at that point, even in the 90s, like Hanna-Barbera was sort of trying to tell these angry, you know, these angry young men who get sort of given all this sort of toxic information that all they have to do is like they just have to drink this protein shake and do a load of lifts and they'll become an alpha and all the women will want to sleep with him. It just kind of feels like they were sort of rejecting that even then in the 90s, this message that still has not been listened to.
It's set up for him always to succeed because he's so handsome, and then he blows it through being just like such a big huge baby always. And I like his mum's in it. Like his main relationship is with his mum, and he's like such a little baby with his mum, which again is like not things I find attractive in real life at all. But I also just really like that his mum was like so in charge of him, I think. Again, power dynamics.
Would like the girls be like initially interested in him because he was hot, and then he would just like be really gross to them or just really sort of whiny and stuff?
He'd just blow it by being completely clueless. It wasn't that he was like massively, massively sexist. The gag with him is that he's just like incredibly self-involved.
So let me get this straight. You guys are spies on a secret mission?
Quite right, Mr. Bravo, quite right.
You want to frisk me?
W, I don't understand why this idiot has to work with me.
Jane, Secret Agent Code 14 clearly states... When an agent
and co-star stumble across a villain, they must both see the case out until its end.
Quite right, Jane.
All right. I guess that makes me the object of desire, huh, baby?
I hate the 90s.
And so he really thinks he's wonderful, which is also, right. again, this, like, do I want to be him or do I fancy him? It's like, I do like a character with self-confidence. With him, it was to the point of absolute delusion. But, yeah, he blows it by being really clueless and really fixated on the wrong things and really obsessed with himself and how he looks and the aesthetics of a situation. And I remember in one episode, I don't know if she's a recurring character, but he has this... the dynamic I really liked is that this like super, super hot chick turns up who you think he would really be interested into. And he's like, Mom, I told you she can't come in the house. And he like hates this woman. And it's his neighbor from when he was a child. And she like constantly humiliated him and bullied him. So even though she's really, really hot now, he's actually just like so vulnerable around her. That it's like, oh, women are the boss of him.
That's sweet. So, yeah, so he does care about personality up to a point. Like, if you're a hot woman but you're horrible, he would not be into you.
Yeah, well, I don't even know if she was horrible. It's like, she's just like, she truly is more alpha than him. And his whole thing is that he wants to be so alpha. Sure. I guess he's like, he is based on Elvis, isn't he? That's the kind of the thing they're pastiching. And again, it's like, I don't know. Elvis is one of those people. Again, I just feel like the move into adulthood is just realizing how terrible everyone you were told was attractive were when you were a child. So it's like you can't fancy Elvis in good faith as an adult, but they were the elements of Elvis that I thought were appealing when I was a little tiny child.
I do remember I did watch the Scooby-Doo crossover because that was like a big part of the appeal, wasn't it? It was sort of the appeal of the show was that Hanna-Barbera would just like bring in all of its other properties and have big crossovers. It was very sort of that it was very 90s to have all that sort of pop culture. And obviously that's something that's taken off a lot with Family Guy and stuff like that. People really love a crossover, a pop culture crossover in a cartoon. But I do remember really enjoying the Scooby-Doo crossover.
Oh, completely. And he's such a clown. He, like, everywhere he goes, he is like a true clown. He really just like is so self-involved. He ruins everything. I don't fully remember that episode, but I do remember there was like some dynamic with Velma where they like accidentally swapped glasses.
My glasses! I can't see without my glasses!
My glasses! I can't be seen without my glasses!
I was like, oh, okay, maybe Velma and this hot dude can be friends.
Oh, I think they've made nice friends. I think they both have a taste for very pretty ladies because I totally shit Velma and Daphne.
Yeah, I think that's very real. And the best part of that show. None of the men on that. I mean, he is a bit of a threat, Johnny Bravo. Is it Fred? Yeah, it's Fred. They are sort of the same.
I mean, they're both handsome and blonde, but Freddie's the sensible one.
Is he?
Yeah, he's sensible and he drives the van.
It's funny that they could pass them over because Johnny Bravo is just like so different style, not even just like an aesthetic style, but like a just so different. He truly does exist in a parallel universe. They must have thought he was such a dumbass.
I think it's because he was sort of I think it's because they wanted to go to a spooky wood and he wanted to go to the same spooky wood and they were like, oh, spooky, we'll do that. Speaking of spookiness, let's go on to your third choice from some very spooky stuff. Probably the most famous thing that she's in is gave me the absolute willies when I was a child. So your third choice is the Great Depression era sexy jazz baby woman who had to battle ghosts and the Hays Code at the same time. Her boyfriend's a dog called Bimbo. She was originally a poodle. Boop, boop, ba-doop. Let's go to the talkies with Betty Boop.
Yay!
So this is like the original cartoon hottie.
Yeah, I think, and it's really interesting that thing with the Hays Code, isn't it? Because I also was very obsessed with Mae West as a teenager. I don't know where I found out about Mae West, but I think they are literally like one and the same, really. And they both got so slammed by the Hays Code. And if you see what they were wearing before, and they were just these like sexy little babies. And I mean, like, it took Mae West out of film, really. But for Betty Boop, it just made her into this like dowdy housewife instead.
Yeah. It took her out of the films as well, because I was reading up on it. So they had to make her a housewife who wasn't married. So a sort of this sort of girl who was doing housewife duties for like her pets and things. And people didn't like it because people liked that she was a sexy, sexy baby.
Made of pen and ink, she can win you with a wing.
Yoo-hoo!
Ain't she cute?
Boop, boop,
sweet Betty.
And they were having to pitch it more downwards towards children, and children weren't interested in a girl doing housework for her dog. And it just died. She didn't make it out of the 30s. She didn't make it to the 1940s. The last cartoon was in 39, I think. Because it feels like she's like a flapper, a sexy little flapper. It kind of, because she started in 1930, which was like the Great Depression was there. Mm-hmm. And it kind of feels as a sort of throwback to the good times of the 20s, because they were in such bad times. It kind of feels like, you know how it sort of like set the centre left love looking back at the 2012 Olympics.
Yeah, yeah. 2012 Olympics and the Depression.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So now we're having a horrible time on rainy Brexit Island with no petrol and no food. And we like going, oh, but wasn't the 2012 Olympics great? So she's like the 2012 Olympics of 1930s cartoons.
Well, literally.
What do you like about her?
Well, I was in general kind of obsessed with the 30s, not that, and like black and white things, because I had a very old grandpa. Like the generational difference with my dad's dad, he was like, I think in his late 50s when he had my dad. So he was born in 1910. Ooh. And that would have been his like 20s, I guess. It's like 20s and 30s. So I felt like I had this very direct little connection to these bits of culture, and I loved to investigate them and think about them and think about that time that loomed very large in my mind. And then I liked her because I liked the music. Like, I was interested in jazz. I liked the aesthetic. I found the like jazz aesthetic of her very sexy. And yeah, I think it was like all those things primarily. But then as I got older, I looked a little bit like her. And I will say, brunette curly hair representation on screen, you know, that is exciting to me. I have a friend who also is like a bobbed brunette who I saw a couple of years ago in, she lives in New York and I was visiting. And she came up to me and she was like, hey, have you been booped? And then I was like, I'm sorry, what on earth does being booped mean? And she was like, this happened to me and it happened to my friend. I was walking along the street and a man shouted boop, boop, ba-doop at me. And they were referring to it as being booped. Like that was a thing that could happen in the world. And it just really made me happy. The idea that I was going to get booped for looking a bit like Betty Boop. It's not happened, but I wanted to.
Definitely. Yeah, she was apparently she was very, very closely based on a 20s actress and singer called Helen Kane, who Helen Kane believed that she was the first one to go poop poop sit up, and she sang and like this and sang like a baby, a sexy baby. A sexy, yeah. So she sang in the sexy baby way, and it felt so. So she believed that that Betty Boop was so closely based on her that she tried to sue.
Wow! Yeah, I would be pissed off too if I was Boo Boo Badooin, and then a cartoon was Boo Boo Badooin, and they were saying it wasn't me. Bet she lost, though. Yeah. Did she win? No.
She absolutely lost. Of course she lost. It was a woman against a corporation.
But it did, they were like, you don't exist at all now.
Yeah. I mean, in fairness, there had been other, like the sexy baby thing was just like a jazz thing and lots of people were doing it, sort of combining that. There was a lot about flappers that was like combining fun time and sex with this sort of innocence, and they'd push it and push it and push it so far that they were like in Annie and Community, I'm a silly Christmas baby. And they'd like push it to being like, we're babies that you can fuck. And quite a lot of women had been doing that, and Helen Kane wasn't the first one, but she just looked so much like Betty Boop that she was like, hang on.
How annoying.
It did lead to this wonderfully creepy description of her that of Betty Boop that I found. That I think the studio sort of came out with. I'm going to read it to you. She combines in appearance the childish with the sophisticated, a large round baby face with big eyes and a nose like a button, framed in a somewhat careful coiffure with a very small body, of which perhaps the leading characteristic is the most self-confident little bust imaginable. Guys, that's so creepy.
It's like, this is the kind of description that I know it exists for the male gaze, this kind of creation. And it's like when a man describes that, it's 100% not okay to me. And then I'm like, okay, if you just take men out of it, it's like, whatever. Yeah, sure. Like she's a brassy broad and like we're allowed.
Yeah, I was sort of obsessed with the Cab Calloway Minnie the Moocher cartoon. As you say, the music is amazing and it looks incredible. It still looks incredible. It's so creepy. There's just something about it just feels haunted. The sort of the scratchy music, the weird sort of pre-Hays Code, very dark animation. Like there's people being electric chaired, there's all sorts of that sort of weird 30s haunted cartoon. There were quite a few of them, weren't there? So there was Mickey Mouse and the Haunted House, there was this, there were a few others. I think Silly Symphonies did like a very haunted cartoon, and it's so 30s, like that whole decade was just so bleak.
Literally. But it definitely sparked in me, like I have always, like I remember really, I mean, I was obsessed with the Addams Family and the Munsters. I always really loved, yeah, a world that was like aesthetically spooky. Something about that really did appeal to me, and I like wanted to live inside it and be the kind of character that existed in those places.
The way that they move, where they're sort of constantly moving, and those big they've all got the big white gloves on, the big white 30s character gloves on. There's something about it that's just, it creeps me, but it delights me as well. It does feel very, very haunted indeed.
Yeah, just like forbidden in so many ways. All these like things you shouldn't do in this like strange little world.
Yeah. And she's going through this haunted cave with her dog boyfriend. Like her boyfriend's a dog. And she was originally a poodle until they sort of went, well, you know, it's cartoons, we'll do what we like, we'll make this dog's girlfriend a sexy jazz baby.
No one wants to fuck a poodle.
No. But apparently she wants to fuck this dog guy. And they're going through this haunted cave, and she's this sexy innocent in peril. And yeah, I totally get the appeal of that.
Yeah, I think it is a type of like sexiness that comes in and out of fashion, but is fundamentally like reclaimable and haveable. And again, I've not seen all of the Betty Boop cartoons, and they do have the energy of a cartoon that probably has some mad racist shit in some of it. It's like, wow, very of that era. But I did see one where she also was like Marlene Dietrich wearing a tails and a top hat. Maybe I'm just attracted to tails and a top hat.
It is sexy. Know.
But I was like, that is an aesthetic that I love. I love her.
I mean, she has, even though her actual cartoon run was very short, like 1930 to 1939, yet she has endured to the present day as a sexy icon. She's, you know, everybody knows who Betty Boop, nobody who knows who Bimbo was, her dog boyfriend, but everyone knows who Betty Boop was. Why do you think her iconography has appealed for so long, to the point that a girl in a bobbed hairdo, in a brown bobbed hairdo, will get boo boo ba doop shouted at her?
She's so distinctive. It's such a distinctive character. I think it's sad in a way because it's not related to anything to do with her, like, personality. Like, no one could say a thing that Betty Boop had said other than boo boo ba doop, which is like kind of the lowest denominator of a catchphrase. But I think she is aesthetically appealing. She feels like she comes from a place, and then she's like the natural, I know she isn't this because she's appeared in the same places, but it's like it leads into that kind of Jessica Rabbit kind of aesthetic, which is that it's just so captures its time and the aesthetic of its time, which is such a different type of sexiness to now, and something that no one would really do in the same way, but was very sexy.
Yeah, I think that is fair enough. And now, yes, as you say, now she's sort of
become... But I don't like to see her out and about today, I will say. I like, it feels like a reanimated corpse. I don't want to see like a CGI Betty Boop. I don't like any of that. I don't want to see Betty Boop made human. Mm. I think her proportions are very wrong. It's like, I don't really want anything but the original.
Well, that brings me to my final question, which is that if I were to grant you the power to make one of these three characters real in the real world, who would you pick and would you try to pursue them?
I think I would have to go with Chip. I feel like in some ways maybe I'm already dating a Chip, so it wouldn't be that far from the truth of the kind of person I literally have gone for my entire life after watching it. But I think Chip and I could go on a really good adventure, and I would definitely want to do some kissing while it was happening.
Excellent.
With that great big chipmunk.
Either he'd be a great big chipmunk man, or you could be like a small mouse girl, I guess. You could have like adventures in the trees.
A hunker chipmunk.
Yeah, a little squirrel.
I'd go tiny. I'd like to borrow, is it?
Yeah. Okay, so
we'd have a good time.
On that note, we've turned you into a borrower so you can have sex with a rodent. Charlie, is there anything you got any projects that you'd like to shout out about before we go?
People can listen to Seance Cast. That would be nice. And yeah,
it's award winning. She got a pillow.
We're available wherever you get this podcast.
Yay! Brilliant, Charlie, thank you ever so much.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you.
I'll be thinking about this all day.
Cheers.
Huge thanks to Charlie Dinkin there. I'm Gabby Hutchison Crouch. For more credits and details, see @curiously_drawn on Twitter.